Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, and I'm really excited for the show today because we're speaking with veterinarian Dr. Melanie Butera all about her book, Dilly the Deer, A Story of Love, Healing, and Family. I read this book, and I'm now a huge fan of Dilly the Deer, and I really wanted to bring her story to all of you, so that's what we're going to do. So, Dr. Butera, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I'm in love with your book, and I'm now totally obsessed with Dilly. So I've been on your cam a bunch of times. She's so cute, I can't stand it.
She has that effect on people.
So I wanted to start at the beginning, if we could. You're a veterinarian, so can you tell us about your practice when Dilly first came to you?
When Dilly came to us in the summer of 2004, I was my business was the local veterinary emergency clinic. I actually sold that in 2004 at the end of that summer. I had owned it for 20 years. So we did emergencies exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And so was it mostly domestic animals, or were you dealing with wild animals as well?
Yes, I volunteered my services for wildlife work, because when things happen at 3 in the morning, there's nowhere else for people to go.
Yeah.
So we always made it a point to do any wildlife work at, you know, no charge, of course, and then involve the wildlife department the next day.
That's really cool. So was it unusual for someone to bring you a fawn?
Well, unfortunately, in Ohio, by 2004, it was illegal for us to work on wild fawns.
Really?
Dilly is a farm deer. She's not a wild deer. So the farmer brought her to me. But in Ohio, it is still illegal for veterinarians to work on wild fawns. It's a law we're actively trying to change.
Why is that? Do you know?
I do. It's very complicated. It has to do with the emergence of deer farming in Ohio is one of the fastest growing businesses in Ohio.
Oh, okay.
And the concern about chronic wasting disease in the deer herds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very complicated issue, and we're trying very desperately to try to get the law changed.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Wow. So when Dilly came to you, what was wrong with her?
Well, she had been born 3 days earlier, and she had not nursed at all.
Wow.
Her mother had rejected her. She was born blind. She was a triplet. And her mother just refused to nurse her, as often does will do when, you know, they have two healthy fawns, and then there's this little runt that can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So her blood sugar was virtually zero. Her body temperature didn't even register on the thermometer, so
wow.
It was at least 12 degrees below normal.
Wow.
And she was in a coma. She was very close to dying.
Wow. And so for you, is it typical protocol for you guys to take care of an abandoned fawn, or did you make an exception for her?
Well, the farmer had brought me a buck fawn a couple weeks before that,
mm-hmm.
but it was DOA,
mm.
so that was how we had even met. But my policy when I ran the emergency clinic was if they can get it to my door, I will do what I can.
That's awesome.
Even if it was a creature and a species I was unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm.
If he had brought, you know, her in at any time, I would have tried to treat her. He made the decision, though, that she was of no value to his farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was born blind and he couldn't even use her for breeding.
Right.
So he didn't want to spend any money to try to save her, but he offered to give her to me if I wanted her and wanted to treat her on my own.
Okay. And so obviously you decided to do this.
Right. But it really isn't a decision so much. It's like, this is what we do.
I hear you.
It's like the insurance commercial, you know, you're a veterinarian and you're presented with a dying, struggling creature, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You save it. You try to save it.
Absolutely.
You know, if it's a possum, if it's a bird, it's a kitten, whatever, this is your duty to do this.
Mm-hmm. And so when you first were, when you and your husband were first taking care of Dilly, was there anything special about her, or was she just a really, really sick baby?
She was. She was. You know, we had helped raise fawns for the wildlife department. You know, when we were able to do that, mm-hmm. It had just been that year that the law had changed, I believe. And even the ones that we had seen from the wild before were a lot healthier than she was.
Wow.
She was so close to dying that had the farmer lived, another 5 miles away, she probably would have been dead.
Wow.
So we had to pretty much be, really aggressive with her critical care. My whole emergency clinic team got on board, and, we had an IV catheter going through her jugular vein. And,
wow.
Within seconds, we had all our emergency protocols in place and were giving her intravenous fluids and sugar and warmth and all the things that a neonate like that's going to need.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't so much that she herself was that special. Of course, she's turned out to be that way, but she was just another struggling baby that was trying to survive, and that was what we do.
Were you surprised that she was able to survive? Because she sounds like she was, really close to being on her way out when you got her.
Yes. I mean, anytime you have a neonate that's, body temperature isn't even registering, hasn't nursed in 3 days, you're not really going to give anyone good odds that they're going to make it through the night. And sometimes they'll come around just long enough to use up what little sugar they have left, and then they crash right in front of you.
Mm.
But fortunately, she did keep making little baby steps forward, and she really wasn't out of the woods for several days, actually.
Yeah, about how long did it take with the 24-hour treatment before you guys realized that, she was going to make it?
She had the jugular catheter, and I think you can only leave a catheter in for 3 days at a time before you have to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember changing it to the other side of the neck. So probably 4 or 5 days she had that catheter in, which means that she wasn't nursing on her own.
Wow.
So we had to still give her, nutrition through the catheter.
And so then after that time, she was able to nurse on her own, so then you were able to remove it, is that correct?
Right.
And then she started really eating, too.
Yes. By the end of that first week, she was nursing well on her own. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so can you tell us a little bit about the first few weeks that you and her husband were taking care of her?
Well, she was so tiny. She only weighed about 4 pounds by the end of the first week. She was not any bigger than our cat.
Wow.
And, we carried her around like a little baby still at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of that first week, she started to follow my husband around. And I say my husband because he spent, more time with her than I did because I was working, 16-hour shifts usually.
Yeah.
And he was with her all, the rest of the day. And by the end of that first week, she started following him around and imprinting on him as a baby would, following the dog around, thinking she was her mom, much to the dog's great dismay. And, she just started to become more and more adventuresome, exploring her surroundings and very curious about everything. So by that third week, she was, I have some video of her following my husband around about that third week time, and every step he takes, she's one step behind.
Aww.
Yeah, she's really, really bonded to him and still is.
It's pretty amazing to think about, an animal that's normally a prey animal being blind and just how scary that would be for that animal,
yes. Yes, absolutely. We actually raised a blind deer for the wildlife department when we were allowed to do that.
Uh-huh.
And we named this deer Rosie. And she was completely blind. She had nothing. I mean,
wow.
no vision at all. And every little step she took was, she was terrified.
Mm.
Terrified. She would, you would just see her trembling. It was so hard.
Oh, the poor thing.
She lived to be about 2. And literally in a blind panic one day, she ran into a tree. She was not captive, but she spent her life around our property because she was so blind she couldn't even go into the woods. And she passed away right in front of us. And we were so heartbroken over that. We were like, never doing this again.
Yeah,
and it was 2 weeks later, months later, I think, the farmer brought Dilly to us. And it's like, what are you going to do? You can't say
exactly,
no, so.
Exactly.
So, but Dilly was very unique because she had just enough vision that she wasn't afraid of anything. And she's very bold. She taught herself to climb up and down those stairs, jump on the bed, jump on the couch. And she just, even now, even her vision is even worse now than it was when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
She's just not afraid of anything.
That was the feeling that I got when I was reading your book, because it was, you know, at the one point where you were trying to put her in the barn and you couldn't do that because she just wasn't ready and she's afraid of the horses and all that. And so you brought her home, like literally in your home. And I mean, I love that. And I just, the stories are so funny and so good. And it just reminds me of, you know, like a regular animal being in your house and being like, oh, look, what's this? Oh, something good. Let me get into trouble. And, you know, let me play and take this apart. You know, and I love that she has her own room. I mean, I think that that's genius. And I'm kind of amazed she goes in it on her own, you know?
Yeah, I have to say that the one thing she was afraid of was the horses. And even as an adult deer, she was terrified of those horses. She never would, you know, and they were friendly horses. She would never, you know, get used to them. And that was the one and only thing, and that's what made us keep her in the house. You know, we did try to acclimate her to the barn, but she could just never get used to those horses. And, you know, she did actually sleep in our room for the first 4 or 5 years that she was with us. And the room that she's in was part of three sets of rooms that we had doored off, walled mm-hmm. off, to be in a mother-in-law suite for my aging mother-in-law, who was suffering from agitated dementia.
Mm.
And so we couldn't let any of the animals over into her space because it was, you know, she couldn't deal with that.
Yeah.
So all the animals were camped in our room at night. You know, we had the standard poodle on the bed, two cats, a Dilly, and the two of us, and neither of us are very small people. And, you know, it was a very crowded bed. And then my mother-in-law passed away, you know, and when she did, we tore down the wall mm-hmm. and the door that separated off this half of the house, and all the animals came running over here like, what's over here? You know, why
yeah,
haven't
totally.
We been able to come over here? And the cats moved into the room first, and then the dog moved in, and then Dilly was like, wait a minute. You know, so then Dilly took over in her room since.
I love the fact that she's like a kid with that room. Like, I'm amazed that when she's tired, she goes to bed. I mean, this is amazing to me, you know? I feel like it's just so cute. And what kept going through my head as I was reading your book is it's like, and after doing this show and, you know, working with animals as I have my whole life, it's like animals are so similar to us in terms of thought processes of what they like in terms of scheduling, you know, where's a comfortable place to sleep? Of course,
right.
A mattress,
yeah.
You know, that it
it's
always
like a cat that way.
It's just,
and it can't
so
just
funny.
Be the mattress. It has to be the mattress with the Egyptian cotton sheets and the beautiful bedspread and the, you know, the most comfortable pillow. Yeah, she's very much a creature of comfort.
It's really funny. That's really funny. And I love that when they know what they like and it's like, no, this is it. You got it? Okay, this is mine. That kind of thing, you know?
Yes.
So cute.
She's definitely lives up to her diva reputation.
Has she always been like that, or did she just kind of get used to everything and got more demanding?
She just claims what she wants, and because she's the biggest animal in the house, everybody else says, okay, you know, you get what you want. But they all seem to cuddle in around her, and, you know, they use the bedroom, too, and especially Willie, our new dog, we've only had for a year and a half. She took right to that bed, and she'll lay right next to Dilly, so they all get along really well. So, but Dilly is definitely the princess.
And sure. So, like, how tall is Dilly?
You know, when I work on a Great Dane, it reminds me of a similar size
okay. Of
height. And weight. So I estimate her at about 170 pounds. She's about 4 feet at her shoulders.
Okay.
I'm 5'2", and if she's like in front of me, if I just bend my head down a little bit, she's like right in my face.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah, that was the one thing, because it's like I lived in the Florida Keys at one point, and they have the key deer, which are the size of, you know, like
yes,
a small dog.
Big key.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly where I was on something Cloud Road. I think Flying Cloud Road. It was a short time, but those deer were great. And so, you know, I'm from New York, and so we have a larger deer here. So I just wasn't sure where she fit in the realms in terms of size and all of that.
Yeah, she's a standard white-tailed deer. Even though farm deer in America, they all come from stock in New Zealand, actually. It's
really?
Kind of an interesting business. But they are true white-tailed deer. They're not a separate species. but all farm deer in the United States have pedigrees that go back to lineage in New Zealand.
That's really interesting.
There she is. She's coming in.
All right, Dilly, you want to say hi?
Hey, Dilly.
So how smart is she?
I've got to hide my glass of water here because she's going to get it. Hi, Dilly. She was outside just a second ago.
And so is she, I know she's a creature of habit, so does she really has a set routine of what she does every day around the same times, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. Yes, and it's very similar to deer in the wild. They have those same type of habits. They eat mostly in the early morning hours. Then they go into the forest to hide and digest their food. And then they're back out about dusk, and they eat at dusk. And that's what she does, too.
And so what do you
feed her? In the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's when I've seen her. Every time I've gone online, it's been like between probably like 2 and 5. And so she's usually there.
Yeah, usually we go to work at about 8 in the morning, and she would have been out since like about 5.
Mm-hmm.
She'll go up and go to bed, and then my husband comes back after he runs like the banking errands and stuff and gets her back outside for a little bit, and then she'll be back on the bed until about 4 or 5 o'clock, depending on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's getting dark so early, so she's been going out about 4.
Wow. Wow, and so you guys have to get up and let her out and all that.
When we're home, or he's home,
mm-hmm.
We leave the back door ajar, and she'll go down and open with her nose.
Oh, nice.
And go out. She doesn't close it. So that can be an issue.
Yeah.
She's coming after my phone. I knew this was going to work. Didn't you just leave her outside? okay, Dilly. She says, I'm a star.
And she knows what's going on. She's like, tell my fans I say hello.
She likes to chew on electric wires and phone wires. So
oh, yikes.
This phone is usually hidden away where she can't see it. Now it's like it's right in front of her.
Oh, perfect. So it's like,
okay, I got her to move me over to the other side of the room.
I'm honored that she came into the room while we were talking. I feel like I've got a bond with her now. This is great.
Yeah, she loves, this is my little upstairs office and where I do my writing and everything, and I'll have music on, and she loves coming in here when I'm working. So we actually put a mattress on the floor for her and a little blanket on it, and she'll lay in here sometimes too.
Oh, that's so sweet. Wow, she just reminds me of like the coolest dog ever, you know, but a little bit more than that as well.
Yeah, she's very unique and very loving.
Oh, that's
so sweet.
So cool. So we need to take a break for station identification. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes. We're talking about Dilly the Deer with Dr. Melanie Butera. So just hang on.
Out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers, artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
And we are back. I am talking to Dr. Melanie Butera all about her book, Dilly the Deer, A Story of Love, Healing, and Family. And actually, I'd love to ask you, Dr. Butera, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, in 2012, I was diagnosed with pre-terminal cancer, stage 4, metastatic endometrial carcinosarcoma.
Wow.
I was told I had about 6 months.
Wow.
I actually came home and after that meeting with the doctor and started writing my own obituary.
Wow.
Sounds like a control freak, but I'm not. And as I was doing that, I came across a folder where I had started a book on Dilly after she became famous in 2009. All these people were writing books about her and articles and everything, and I thought, you know, I know her better than anybody. I can write this book.
Yeah, really?
Kind of foolishly thought that. So I had started this book, and then life happened. I had a series of personal losses of friends, the things that happen when you're my age, and so I put the book aside, and then right after that chain of tragedies was my own diagnosis. So I had totally forgotten that I'd even started that book, and I had written about 100 pages of it already. So I threw away my obituary, and I thought, you know, this is the legacy that I want to leave. So I didn't write it for money at the time. Not really making that much money off of it now either, but that's neither here nor there. But I didn't really write it for money. I didn't even know that anybody would ever read it. I had to self-publish it because I didn't have time in my mind to send out letters to people or, you know, to try to get it published.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what inspired me to write the book.
And it's such a powerful book. It's when I first started reading it, I just assumed it would just be really about Dilly. And then hearing your story as well and having the two intertwined, I mean, you're really a brave woman to write this book, you know? And the story is so amazing and so touching.
That was the editors and the contributors' idea because I didn't really want to talk about myself. I really didn't. And in fact, my self-published book, I didn't even put it in my viewpoint. I added as third person. I wasn't very embarrassed to write about myself. It's kind of like singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. You know, you're just really out there in front of people.
Yeah, forget it.
But it was the editors at Regan Arts and the contributor, Diane Reverend, that said, hey, this needs to be from your viewpoint, and we need some stories about you to kind of make it more 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So they really guided me through that, and I really liked the end product, that it makes it much more interesting.
Yeah, and it makes it much more real as well, you know, because, I mean, Dilly's story is wonderful, and Dilly kind of, it's funny, because her story reminds me so much of that childhood book Rascal about the raccoon that, like, all of us read a million years ago.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing of, like, this animal who's, you know, kind of a wild animal, but kind of fits in the house and does all this kind of stuff. And then putting your story in with it and then seeing how everything interacts with, you know, your practice, which is so busy, and then the animals and the treatment and your husband and Dilly and it really affected me. I started reading it and did not put it down. I love to read. It's a great book. It's really a great book. And it really, your honesty and your candor is what really makes it that special.
But one of the things they did do was they took out all my sarcasm. So my brother was like, so it's like 4 pages, right? And I said, you know, and even that, I understood why, because, you know, they didn't really want to, like, there's some things that happened with my priest after I was diagnosed that lent me to be sarcastic about the Catholic Church. And, you know, they don't really want to take on the Pope when they're talking about a little deer. So I can understand.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Totally. What made Dilly famous?
Well, in 2009, I got a GPS device for her collar from a company that's no longer exists called Zoomback. And it was $99. And my husband of, at the time, 20-some years, was really upset that I spent this $99, even though I'm the breadwinner in the family and everything. He has to bellyache about every dollar I spent. And he was just going on and on and on about this $99, how useless this is, la-da-da. So as I was registering the device, a banner scrolled across the screen, show us a video how you use your device and you'll win $1,000 in our contest. So I thought, I'm going to enter this video and I'm going to win this darn contest. I'm going to show him and shut him up about this $99. And that's what prompted me to do it. So I submitted the video. I had a heck of a time getting the video in on the deadline. Everything, just one thing after the other, kept going wrong. The computer died, everything. Just, you know, and I just kept plugging away. I was so determined to win this contest. And I got it in 5 minutes before the deadline.
Nice.
And about 2 hours later, they called me and said, "You won."
Yay!
That's it. You won. So they released that to the media. This was, you know, all part of a publicity campaign for them. And the day after they released it to the media, we had satellite trucks in our driveway, and it just all started from there.
Wow. Wow. So then what prompted you to create the DillyCam?
Well, Marcus Inney from Fox 8 News in Cleveland, he's now with a station in Connecticut. I'm sorry, I don't remember the news station he's at, but he was the local Fox reporter at the time in 2009, and he called me out of the blue after the story had hit on the airwaves and said, "Oh, we want to do a story on Dilly, but we want to do a twist, we want to do a webcam." I said, "What are you, crazy? You know, all she does is drool." You know, what are you, nuts? And he's like, "Oh, no, people will love it, it'll be a big hit." And I was like, "Well, okay, you know, whatever."
Totally.
I didn't think it would be going on here, you know, now 6 years later.
Oh, my
God. Doing it. But it was all Mark Zinni's idea.
It's so funny. And so, I mean, when I was on it, or when I've been on it, I mean, there's a rolling number at the bottom. When I was on it, it was like 316,000. I mean, I'm assuming that a lot more people have seen Dilly. Like, is that number how many people have are watching that currently?
That's on her Ustream camera, and it's up to about 600,000 now. But she was on a different server before called www.www, something like that.
Yeah.
And that website is down now. But she was over 2 million people on that site. So for the first 2009 till like 2012, she was on this other site. And we had to switch to Ustream after the other site closed down.
Wow.
So the 600,000 that you see on Ustream is actually just over the last year or 2 years, maybe. So really over 2 million people have seen her.
And some people are, like, really connected to you guys, too. Like, I love that, you know, if she's outside late, that you start getting, like, messages and emails, like, "Where's Dilly?"
Oh,
you
God.
Know?
Just God forbid we should have a power shortage in our area.
Oh, my Lord. I can't even imagine.
They go crazy. Yeah, they do. They go nuts. You know, and like I said, I don't know if this is in the finished book or not. It was in the self-published book, but a true story that, you know, one time we had a tornado warning and the power was out, and somebody starts texting me, "Where's Dilly?" And I wrote back, you know, "Tornado warning, we're in the basement."
Yeah.
She writes back, "Oh, can you please let me know when she's back on?" And it's like, okay, yeah, as soon as the tornado, you know, leaves, I take the shards of glass out of my eyes.
Totally, totally.
You'll
when we come back from Kansas, we'll be fine. Oh, God.
You know, so some of these people, you know, you're an animal person, I'm an animal person. We all know that we animal people are a little bit on the kooky side.
Yeah, we are.
In a good way. But some are a little bit obsessed with Dilly, to the point that it's like, wow, you know, okay, this is a little too much.
That's
so
funny.
We've kind of gotten used to that part of it as well. So
do you get like Dilly fan mail and like Dilly, like portraits of Dilly and like Dilly art?
Oh, yes.
And groovy stuff
portraits,
like that?
Yeah, she, all those toys on her bed. She's got 100 toys on that bed.
Yeah, yeah.
They were all sent to her.
Wow.
Some from Australia, some from England. And I was just thinking that maybe I should put these all through the wash and donate them to Toys for Tots or something. But then I pick them up and I think, oh, this was sent by Mary in England, and this was sent by Sandy in Australia. I can't give those away. No, but there's so many on the bed now, she barely has room on the bed. So I think we're going to have to do a weeding out of some of the toys.
You know, it's funny. I actually I have two cats, and they have a toy chest or a toy bowl, basically. And I went and bought some new toys, so I was going through them and, like, pulling out the disgusting old ones, and I've got them in a trash can. And, of course, the cat's running over like, "No, I like this one. You don't understand." It's like,
right.
Really? You know, and pulling them out of the trash as quickly as I could throw them in. It was like, all right, fine, you win. You can keep them all. You know, it's really funny, though. What a riot.
The older and more drooled on ones are the ones that they want.
Yeah, those are the good ones, like the ones like missing eyes and are the fur's all rubbed off or half eaten. It's like, no, that's my favorite. Ugh, so that's my friend. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So where do you think she's the most popular? Do you think she's more popular in Europe than she is here?
No, she definitely has more fans than in the United States. But there's, you know, there's buds of her fans in Australia and England, Russia, South Korea, Brazil, Uganda.
Really?
South Africa.
Wow.
I know, it's really amazing. But there's definitely more people, and, you know, the closer we are to Little Canal Fulton, the more fans there are. There's been more press locally. Even before she got famous nationally, there was press locally. So there's been more people that, you know her. And she gets mail. It's like, you know, Miracle on 34th Street. They just address it to Dilly the Deer, and the post office delivers it.
Oh, no way.
You know, this is a little tiny town of about 3,000 people. We're next to a town of 300,000 people. But Canal Fulton itself is a little tiny town with one post office and one person that works at the post office.
Oh,
and one
wow.
person that delivers the mail. So all anybody has to do is put Dilly the Deer on it, and it's going to make it up our hill here. So,
oh, that's so cute. I mean, this really is a children's book.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
This really is a children's book as well.
Yeah, we're actually hoping to do a children's book. It's going to be up to the publisher whether to go ahead with it, but that was part of the original discussion.
It's just so cute. I mean, I can't stand it. So does Dilly do, like, you know, appearances and stuff, or does she have a pretty low-key life in terms of her fans?
She's actually not allowed by state law to leave our property. She has to stay behind an 8-foot fence, and, you know, we have to follow all the
laws.
And so we have about 2.5 acres behind the fence right now. We have a total of 5 acres. We're going to add on another acre or so next year into the fence to give her a little bit, but she's not allowed to leave the property at all.
So do you have people, like, constantly contacting you, like, I need to meet Dilly?
Yeah, we do have people that come visit her all the time. And, you know, they Boy Scout, Girl Scout troops and kids.
Oh, that's
and
cute.
Adults, but we have a lot of adults that come to see her. So, she has a whole... She loves visitors, though. Because they always bring, you know, stuff. Roses,
yeah, totally.
Whatever, things that she loves.
This deer's got a good life.
Yes, she does.
She really, really does. I mean, we should all, you know, hope to come back as Dilly, because it sounds awesome. Just adoring crowds, comfy bed, good food, people and pets and friends that love you. I mean, hey, what's not to like, you know?
Yes. She's very spoiled.
So, and, did you ever think that Dilly would affect your life the way it has, or the way she has?
No, and couldn't have possibly thought that. That's for sure. I really thought that once she won that contest, that, you know, this would last a couple months and that would be it.
Yeah,
you know, which was fine. You know, we didn't really. Even now, we don't really want all the attention. I want the books to succeed because so many people are involved in the book, and it's like she's created more jobs than the government ever could from
seriously.
All the stuff she's done. But so I want it to succeed, so I want the publicity out there and everything, but we don't really, I mean, when someone offered us a reality series, and we were like, no way.
Oh, God, can you imagine?
My sister Karen was like, you're crazy, she could be Honey Poo Poo. But, you know, those things don't really work out for the people involved. You know?
No, and then you get to wake up with a camera in your face, and, you know, and then we're going to create drama. And like, no, I'm with you on that side. Forget that. No. You know, it's...
And the only reason we keep doing the Dilly Cam and everything is because it's just so important to so many people. You know, and I've had days, you know, I just had my 28th chemo like 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And then there's days where I don't feel like doing anything. I still have to go to work. You know? And the last thing I want to do is do the Dilly Cam. But Steve will be like, no, you have to do it. All these people are counting on you. And, you know, it's really important to them. And you're giving them heat, peace, and happiness. And so once in a while, I'm just be like, okay, you do it.
Yeah,
So he has to go do it. But he started doing the morning tea time. So he is doing his part, too.
Actually, I saw him, when was it? I think it was Saturday. And it was, I was like, oh my God, I was so excited. It was like, it made everything even more real. You know, it was really nice to see him. And it was like, that's who Dilly loves. Oh, it's your buddy. You know, it was really like, I'm telling you, I'm sucked in. I promise I'm not going to be one of these people that's like, where's Dilly? But, I was kind of, you know, I switched on it just to see what it was about. And then all of a sudden I look and it's like 20 minutes later. I was like, really? I was like, you know, it's so soothing. It's like the greatest calming thing. And then I sent it to a friend of mine who actually grew up in West Virginia. And he's like, is this a deer on a bed? And it was like, yes, it is. And it's like, and this is real. And he's like, you've got to be kidding. So he's actually reading the book right now. And he just thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, you know, I like it too, because I feel like deer are getting so much negative press these days from Lyme and things like that and the overpopulation and, you know, just like in New York anyway, the problems that they're having because we're developing so much that they don't have anywhere to go, you know, and people don't realize that part, you know, they're like.
And they're adapting to our society and our suburbia very well.
They really are.
That's what animals do. They adapt, you know, and no matter what's thrown at them, they either adapt or they go extinct.
Yeah.
They're actually loving our manicured lawns. And, you know, my husband and I, we have property out in Sandpoint, Idaho,
mm-hmm.
and there's a community there called Hope. It's a little peninsula that sits into this pristine lake, and it's a deer sanctuary.
Oh, cool.
And people there have deer in their yards like we have birds. You know,
oh, wow.
They're everywhere.
Wow.
And every little plant that grows in their yards has to be behind a wire cage.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Or it's gone. You know, so you see these gardens with these huge cages around them and shrubbery, because deer will eat everything. So
That's true.
I do understand how we have to control the population in the wild. You know, I do
certainly
understand that. And we used to have flowering bushes all around our pool. Rose of Sharon, you know, beautiful butterfly bushes, these beautiful butterfly bushes. And the very first summer Dilly came to us, we had all these flowering plants around the pool. By the end of that summer, there was nothing left. She had eaten everything.
Man.
And she was just a fawn. You know?
Wow.
So all that's left now is one weeping cherry tree that I mentioned in the book that we call the Weep No More cherry.
Yeah, totally.
It all. It grows like a palm tree instead of a weeping tree. It grows straight up.
Poor thing's terrified. It's like, this is the only way I could do this is if I go up.
Right.
Yeah. Oh my God, this has been so much fun. We're sadly running out of time. I could talk to you forever. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh,
I know you're crazy, crazy busy between your practice and everything else. So I'm really, really honored that you took the time to speak with me. So thank you for
that. Thank you for all you do for animals.
Oh, thank you.
Great to talk to other animal people.
It's been really fun, and what I love about it is I've just learned so much. You know, I relish being able to speak to everybody and learn things, because if I didn't have this show, most of these people wouldn't talk to me for a half hour, you know, so it's really nice to be able to do this. So for people that are now desperate to find Dilly's information and her cam and all that, how can we find you guys, and where can we get the book?
The best place to go is her website, dillydeer.com, dillie.com. Because there's a link there to where you can get the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It should be in any of your regular booksellers. If they don't have it, they carry it.
Perfect.
But it should be in all the regular booksellers. It's definitely on the Amazon. And then also there's a link to her Dilly Cam on there, which is on Ustream. We've been doing Periscope broadcasts with her through Twitter as well, which has been really fun.
Oh, cool.
As well.
Cool.
She has a very active Facebook page, so if you join her Facebook page, you can talk to all the other Dilly fans as well.
I was on that today, and I just got such a kick out of it. It was just great, and I love the things that people are posting on it as well. You really can meet, like, Dilly has really created this amazing community of people.
She has, and they care about each other so much.
That's so awesome. Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of them have gone through real difficulties and tragedies and losses themselves, and they've all been there for each other. It's just really marvelous, and we got to meet them in person when we had Hoofstock, the party, in September, and then we had Hoofstock 2 this past September,
Aww.
And we got to meet a lot of them, about 150 of them in
wow.
person. It was wonderful.
Wow. Wow, that's really magic. I mean, that alone, and the fact that it's a community that does know each other and care about each other, that's so touching. That's really wonderful.
It is. Yeah, they really inspire me.
God, that's great. Well, Dr. Butera, thank you again. Good luck with everything. If I'm ever in your neighborhood, I will be knocking at your practice because I would love to meet you, and I want to meet Dilly, but...
Oh, absolutely.
We'll see what happens with that one, so... But like I said again, you guys pick up the book. It's Dilly the Deer, A Story of Love, Healing, and Family. It's a great read. You can read it for to your kids as well. I loved it. I'm pretty picky on my books. So saying that, thank you very much for listening. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode. So take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.